I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. After the violence and uprising in Baltimore in 2015, lots of people did lots of talking about the importance of education if we want to improve the lives of the people who live in our most distressed neighborhoods. On Friday, Baltimore City School President and CEO Dr. Sonia Sanalesis will announce her plan for next year's city schools budget. It could include layoffs of as many as 1,000 teachers and school personnel when the new fiscal year starts in July. The reason? The schools are facing an estimated $130 million budget gap. The teachers' union has called job cuts unacceptable, and Dr. Sanalesis herself has said that the cuts she may be forced to make will drastically change the way the school system looks. Today, Sonia Sanalesis joins me in Studio A to talk about tough fiscal choices and the impact on the children of our city. First, the news. And welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you've tuned in this afternoon. Last week, Baltimore City Public Schools President and CEO Dr. Sonia Sanalesis informed families, partners, and friends of the school system that unless additional funding is secured for next year's school budget, Baltimore schools are facing layoffs of more than 1,000 staff members. Cuts to arts and enrichment programs are likely as well, as the system tries to close a $130 million budget gap. Rising school costs and declining enrollment are not new challenges to city schools, but this year's shortfall is the largest the district has faced in a long time. The head of the Baltimore Teachers Union has called the layoffs unacceptable, and Dr. Sanalesis herself concedes that her plan to balance the budget, which she'll present on Friday, will drastically change how the school system operates. So how did we get here? The state of Maryland is facing its own budget crisis that may leave many programs cut or underfunded, including Baltimore City Public Schools, which at the moment are slated to receive $42 million less from the state next year. When casino gambling was approved in Maryland several years ago, proponents promised huge windfalls for the Maryland Education Trust Fund. To date, about $1.7 billion has been added to the fund from casino revenues, but the law allowing gambling didn't require the state to actually spend more on education. In fact, Baltimore City has received less funding from the state for education than it did before the casinos opened. Plus, the consent decree between the Department of Justice and the city includes reforming the relationship between city law enforcement and school police. What will those reforms look like, and how will Governor Hogan's proposal about control of charter schools affect the city? Dr. Sonia Sanalesis joins me today in Studio A to talk about the tough fiscal choices she is facing as she seeks to right the ship while improving the outcomes for the roughly 82,000 students in her charge. Dr. Sanalesis, welcome back to the show. It's good to see you.
It's great to be back.
So let me start with a little lesson in budgeting. People use the term, and you use this term in your letter to the parents and everything, of a structural deficit. Mm-hmm. People talk about the state being in a structural deficit. We've heard the city's in a structural deficit. If you have a thing that you're running and the budget is $1,000 and you spend $2,000, meaning you have $1,000 of income and you have $2,000 of expenses, you have an operating deficit of $1,000. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between an operating deficit from year to year and a structural deficit?
Yes. So a structural deficit means that there is a kind of built-in expense or a variety of built-in expenses that continue to accumulate in terms of cost. An actual kind of operational, at least in the terminology that I use with the team, are temporary expenses, right? Expenses that might be one time, expenses that might be, you know, 1 or 2 years or something. But structural, when we actually dug deeper into our budget and we partnered with Educational Resource Strategies to do this, some of the structural measures that we found were things that are just kind of baked into how we do business that now we have to basically go back and revisit and say, how do we change those kind of elements that are baked in already?
A couple years ago, the deficit for the school system was estimated to be about $60 million, rather, and that was fixed. And how did you fix it then? And can you use those same fixes this time to deal with a deficit that's now more than twice as large?
So And again, that is a question that comes up frequently that we asked as well. And when we looked back, what we saw, for example, in the previous $60 to $65 million budget gap that the district faced, that it really was a combination of one-time fixes, right? So it was a spending freeze. It was a hiring freeze. And what you know, non-educators might not understand is that a hiring freeze in January means that if you have an open vacancy that you for somebody that you might need, we put a freeze on that. And so we recaptured. Spending freeze. We stopped spending in schools in January. We placed a freeze to hold as a way of recapturing money. Those kinds of things we did for that that budget gap, the $60 million for FY17. We will do them this year. But there are other ways, one-time means that we use to fill the gap that, frankly, are not sustainable. So, for example, deferring the payment on our new 21st century school building. So if we defer a payment, say, of $30 million or $20 million, as I'm sure the listening audience understands, you know, you can defer payment. That doesn't mean payment forgiven, right? It means that you still have to pay it. We took from our fund balance, which is the district reserve, that the board requires us to have to maintain within 3 to 5% of our overall budget. Well, we dipped into that savings. We dipped into that pot, and it hasn't been replaced. So like a personal savings account, you can dip in for a rainy day when you need it, but if you don't replace it, you can't keep going back. Other things, last year we were fortunate through the advocacy of legislators, the work of the governor and others, that we received an additional $12 to $13 million from the state. But again, that was a one time. So when you look at how that budget gap was filled, it was putting off some expenses, one time recaptures of funds, one time infusion of funds. But as you alluded to earlier, the structural gap hasn't changed. We can't count on that every single year.
So does that then alone explain how a deficit can be $60 million 2 years ago and it will more than double next year? How does it get that much bigger that quickly?
And again, one of the things that we've done in a lot of our communications with partners and others, and we do need to do, you know, more within the school level, but I've shared this with legislators at the state level and our local officials. What's basically happened is there's been a decline in enrollment, which means a decline in revenue. And as everyone saw when the governor released their budget, there was a $42 million decline. So if you take the $42 million, that's one part of that $130 million that we had anticipated. And we generally got that right in terms of the ballpark. What you'll also see is flat and somewhat declining state revenue over a long period of time, not just under this governor, but over a period of time. And so that's less per pupil dollars coming in. You combine that then with the cost of 21st century buildings that we as the district are paying out of our operating. You look at the increased cost of employee benefits and compensation. That's a part. So it's not one thing. It's the culmination of a number of factors. So we've got about five major factors. Another one is our proportion of small schools. We have a disproportionate number of schools that K through 8 and elementary schools that are under 350 students. So
those buildings are more expensive to run than the ones that are have more kids.
That's right. That's right. So there's a number of factors that kick in, and also like the needs of our students, right? So we spend more than other LEAs on things like social emotional supports for kids.
What's an LEA?
Physical supports. I'm sorry, other local jurisdictions, mm-hmm. other local school districts. And we also, because we partnered with ERS, we said we also want to know how we line up with other urban districts across the country who have similar profiles in the students they serve as Baltimore City. So the advantage of that partnership was we got to compare ourselves to our state peers in a number of cases, but also our national urban, large urban peers as
well. So this ERSs, Educational Resource Services, what do they do? What's their function?
So their function really for us, and what they do with a number, they've worked with a number of large school districts, is to look at what is the way to really match, have school funding resources match school teaching and learning priorities. What are the ways that school districts can not only increase efficiency, but effectiveness of dollars? And we're also looking at that, too. I mean, this is not just a one-lever gap. We're not going completely to schools, but part of what we're experiencing now is the fact that what I think were very well-intentioned efforts to protect schools from any cuts over the last few years is now increased to the size that even with trying to garner as much as say 30 or 40 million of this gap from other areas, including central office, we're now at a place where it's going to impact schools.
It's a big laundry list there you've just talked about.
Yeah,
the various
sorry about
reasons.
That.
That's okay.
So it is.
And it's a complex thing, and we'll try to unpack things one at a time. Let's first of all talk about this 20th century Building Fund. This is a little clip from Marietta English, who's the head of the mm-hmm. Baltimore Teachers Union. Mm-hmm. She spoke with WYPR's Kenneth Burns on Friday.
You have this unfunded mandate of the 21st Century Building Fund, and I think that needs to be renegotiated. And then we've lost children from the city. And when you lose city children, you lose revenue. And in 3 years, we've lost almost 3,000 students.
So it's 3,000 students,
about
that number. Mm-hmm. Explain to folks this 20th Century Building Fund. Everybody was very excited when, $1 billion was earmarked to build new schools in the city school system. If we have fewer kids going to school, why do we even need new schools? Number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, if we get this building fund, it is costing the school system between $20 and $30 million out of the operating funds, mm-hmm. not out of some separate capital fund, but out of the money that you use to pay teachers and custodians and personnel to service that debt. These are bonds. So mm-hmm. when you talk about deferring the payment, this is deferring the payment on a bond that you've purchased.
That's right. And so, well, I think a couple of things. First, again, it's not one factor. So I don't want, it shouldn't be that the public runs out now blaming 21st century schools. Number one, because it was the public, it was the mobilization of communities across Baltimore City and frankly, advocates across the state who know that our school buildings, our infrastructure is probably the oldest or amongst the oldest in the state. And anybody can walk into any of these schools that are being replaced, being rebuilt, and know that those conditions are not the right conditions for Baltimore City public school students. And what we have done, I think, very responsibly as a district over the years is that we have said where new buildings are being built, we need to consolidate schools. So the district for quite some time, even back when I was chief academic officer and before, was beginning to make a lot of those decisions around closing schools. And so the 21st century school buildings are not just brand new schools for brand new school's sake. They're brand new schools for existing students in Baltimore City to replace, frankly, in a lot of instances, decrepit conditions for young people. And we're consolidating. The district went about it responsibly. It's just it's like anybody's family budget, right? We invested in a number of places. So it's not just one element, right? We, 6-7 years ago, the district invested in moving to full day pre-K because we believe that nobody would argue that moving to full day pre-kindergarten, making sure it's quality pre-kindergarten, was a horrible investment. It's just that at some point when the money coming in is not being maintained at the same level of the expenses that we've committed to, that's when it becomes problematic. I mean, I think to the credit of a lot of folks, we saw the value of things like pre-K. We supported school choice. We knew that we needed new buildings. And again, I defy any challenge anybody to go into the buildings that are being rebuilt and say, oh, that's, let's just let the kids stay there. I don't think that's the point. The point is, how do we make sure that we bring the revenue again to match the investment and that we as a community have a discussion, which I have said over and over again, that is about to what level are we going to educate our young people in Baltimore City? We have schools that are over-enrolled, that have wait lists, that we have some, a couple of our programs that people, you know, people from surrounding counties want to opt into. It is not a lack of quality programming. Do we need it for more kids? Do we need to raise achievement? Yes. Do we educate the largest portion of children living in extreme poverty? That means below 50% of the poverty rate. We have kids and families in this city that live on less than a lot of people in my neighborhood spend on vacations every year. And so to paint this as if it's one thing by anybody is irresponsible, and I haven't done it. But we do need to have a community conversation around to what level are we going to educate our young people.
And that community conversation is taking place in part right here on Midday. Our guest today, Dr. Sonia Santelices. She's the president and CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. We already have a few folks on the line. We will try to get to your calls. You can join our conversation when we come back from a quick break. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You want to drop us a tweet, our handle is @MiddayTomHall. More with Sonia Santelices when we come right back. And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the program, the nominations are in, and film critic Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post and Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival will be in here in Studio A with me tomorrow with their erudite Oscar prognostications. Favorites like Moonlight and La La Land have been scoring big on the awards circuit. So how will they do at the Academy Awards later this month? Tune into the Midday Movie Mayhem tomorrow to find out what our movie mavens think. It's actually later next month, or today's the 1st of February, so it's later this month. It's because the end of February. And if you're just joining us today, my guest is Dr. Sonia Santelices, the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. She has announced a plan to close a $130 million budget gap. Last Friday, she started talking about plans to do that. I was incorrect, I guess, Dr. Santelices, mm-hmm. when I said you're going to do something this Friday.
Yes.
You told legislators and some folks last Friday, mm-hmm. but now you're getting the specifics.
That's right.
But
that's
you mentioned the specter, the possibility of layoffs.
Right.
Could total about 1,000 people. If you would like to be part of our conversation here on Midday, our phone number 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Dr. Santelices, let me run for you an ad that the casino industry had all over television and radio in 2008.
Right now, we lose $400 million a year from Marylanders who play slots out of state. Those are Maryland dollars paying to improve education in West Virginia and lower taxes in Pennsylvania. But we can bring those dollars home by passing slots here in Maryland. Question 2 recaptures the million slot players are spending out of state and invests $660 million directly into our schools. It's why the Maryland Chamber of Commerce, local police, and classroom teachers are all supporting Question 2.
So casinos were the panacea. They were the solution to the problems of funding public schools. So explain to folks what happened. They put in fact, since the casinos opened, the first one went online, I guess, 2010. So in the last 6-7 years, they put in $1.7 billion. That's a lot of cash. What happened?
So, and again, you should have another guest to speak expertly on the casino money, since that is not my specialty area. But I do think where I have heard a lot of the discussion is I think that there were some members of the public who thought that the casino money legislation would, you know, would provide money for schools above and beyond their existing budget. That provision is not part of the legislation. So a lot of the debate that I have been hearing, and again, I was just entering the district maybe, or just had soon after the legislation had been passed, I have to check, when the ad, like the one you played, was occurring. But I do think in talking to people that that's where a lot of the confusion is. There are a lot of people who thought that they were paying for extra money above and beyond the budgeted amount to go to schools. And
everybody thought that. Everybody. No provision. I mean, because that was the pitch. The pitch was all this money goes to education. And it was clearly implied that there was going to be more money. Delegate Kurt Anderson at the time sponsored a bill that would have forced officials in the state to use the trust fund money to increase money for education. It died in committee, never even got out of committee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the governor complains about mandates and about, you know, things in his budget that are mandated that he has to spend money on. But what's happened, I guess, I mean, tell me if this is your understanding, is that money's been put into the Education Trust Fund and then it's been taken out and spent on other stuff.
Well, and I think what happens, again, from my understanding, you should have some legislators on to talk about the legislation specifically.
Oh, believe me, we will.
I stay within my bailiwick. But what I will say is that it's kind of a classic what we call in school parlance, a supplement versus supplant, right? So what happens is, my understanding, and again, the legislators can verify it, is that that money is in fact used for education. But then the money that gets freed up in the general budget that would have gone to education, they now, based on legislation, are permitted to spend in other areas. So it's not that it's not going to education, but it gets into this, is it additional or does it take the place of? And I think that's where a lot of the public conversation is happening.
Right now, it seems to be taking the place of, and that's a problem. Daphne in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Dr. Sonia Sonalesis.
Hello, thank you. It's nice to be able to speak to both of you. I'm the executive director of the National Association of Social Workers for Maryland, and I, of course, we have a lot of social workers who are in the public schools, and I'm just curious about the 1,000 positions which might be eliminated. How many of them might be coming from North Avenue? How many are coming from teachers? How many are coming from, you know, other areas like social work and, you know, the services that children receive in the school? And then my second question was, how many people actually work at North Avenue? I've always been curious about that.
And Dr. Sonalesis, thank you for that call, Daphne. You mentioned this in your letter to the families that, you know, in the past you've been able to whittle down the number of personnel at North Avenue. In other words, folks who are not in classrooms, but folks who are working in administration. You're saying that that's no longer an option.
Well, and so to Daphne's, to your point and to Daphne's question, so we are actually that 1,000 number, or and I think I said 1,000 plus number, really addresses schools. There will be additional cuts at central office, like in addition to that. And to keep in mind that central office has been bearing the brunt of a lot of the cuts in past years. Again, in a, I think, well-intentioned attempt to preserve the school-based staff as much as possible. What we do know when we did our analysis, because, you know, one of the first things people ask, and I think rightly so, is, so what's going on at North Avenue? Like, who's in there? You see this big building, you know, who's in there? What we found in the analysis that ERS did, when you compare the dollars that we spend on our central office to other comparable urban school districts, we're actually below that average. And that has been, I think, the efforts over a number of years to reduce the number of people at central office.
Do you have a number off the top of your head about how many people
actually work at
central office?
No, I can certainly get that. Yeah. And, you know, I'm happy to have somebody email Daphne specifically.
But your understanding is that whatever that number is now, it's fewer people than
it was
4 years ago.
Yeah, and we actually do. I just don't have the slide in front of me. When we've presented this to partners and to legislators, we actually have a slide that shows the reduction in the number of FTEs over the past 3 years.
Full-time employees?
Yes, sorry. Full-time employees. And then the other piece to that is we do know, based on the dollar amount, that it's much less.
So what kinds of cuts are we looking at? I mean, this is a really severe problem. And 1,000-plus people is a lot of people.
It is a lot of people.
So who goes?
So we're running the scenarios now. What the direction we're moving, which is in line with the leadership direction we've had for a number of years, is allowing schools to really make the decisions about a majority of the cuts. In one school, you know, it might mean increasing class size by 5 to 7 students, by as many as 10 students in some cases, by, you know, reducing, say, the number of third grade classes from 3 to 2. Right. It could mean that in other schools, it might mean other support staff for young people, because we have a large number of young people with IEPs, those IEPs.
Individual education. Thank you. Programs.
Thank you for keeping me honest on my education.
I'm Mr. Acronym here.
No, you should hold me. Be the acronym police. I appreciate it. But for a number of our students with disabilities, those supports would still be in place legally and ethically, where we need to keep those in place. But it does mean that at a variety of schools, it might mean the lessening of specials. So like my own kids, like they really like their drama class and they like their art class. So some schools may need to make decisions about, do we have both? Do we have one? Do we have any? And so I think...
And you've said in the past that these are the kinds of things that make kids love school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And everybody knows that, like I said, both as a mother and as an educator, those are the things that help kids connect to the reading and the math. I talked to one principal yesterday who has a significant number of her young people who qualify for free and reduced lunch, who come from, low-income homes. And one of the things she said is that the new science curriculum, the SABIS curriculum, that's very hands-on, very experiential, lots of real hands-on science for their elementary school, a lot of kids that weren't necessarily engaged in the math class are connecting now to the math through this new investment in science and hands-on science at the elementary level. So what we're finding is that those areas, and you're right, and I say it again, that the areas that kids love most that connect them to the, to some of the math and reading are some of the things that are most vulnerable when we unfortunately have to make cuts like this.
Dr. Sonia Sonalesis is the president and CEO of the Baltimore City Public School System. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. You can join our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phones again. Hillary in Baltimore, you've been very patient. You called even before the show went on the air. What's on your mind today? Thanks for your call.
Hi, Tom and Sonia. I appreciate you guys having this discussion today. It's very important. So I know many, many people, and I definitely wanted to give you guys a call in regards to, Sonia, it sounds like you have a lot of hard decisions that you have to make, and it also sounds like you guys are very well aware of the expenses that you guys have to spend, and all of them are very understandable as well because of the state of the schools and the amount of students that you have. The reason that I wanted to call is that currently we have we're a family of three. We have a family of five. We have three children. We live in Baltimore City. We're districted for Roland Park, which is great because their scores are fantastic. However, recently our family had expanded to the third child, and we're looking at moving. And up until we've heard this news, we actually were looking at living in Baltimore City as opposed to going to the county. But because of the quality of schooling that we're afraid our children will not receive in the city for much longer, based off of the budget cuts and the continual decline in the area school scoring, we are concerned about the cuts that you have to make and where we're going to live, which, of course, as people pull out based off of the schooling, it may actually cause issues with how much money you receive. And not to take the topic too far off, but if DeVos is actually confirmed, then, of course, that voucher program might be smart to start seeing it.
Ultimately, yeah, and you're referring to Betsy DeVos, who's President Trump's nominee for Secretary of Education.
Exactly. So really the key point, just real quick, is really it seems to be an income issue, and I do appreciate that you can't really speak too much regarding the casino money coming in, but that, I think, needs to be really who's going to be accountable for that. Say that the money that's supposed to go to the schools in some way, shape, or form is going to be mandated to go to those schools, because that's going to be one key thing. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Hillary. I mean, you know, this is a problem that Mary English of the BTU, the Baltimore Teachers Union, has said as well, that, you know, families all of a sudden, they find themselves, you know, young married couples, all of a sudden they have a few kids, and they say, well, we can't live in the city anymore.
Yeah,
that's one of the reasons that we've got 3,000 fewer kids now than we did 3 or 4 years ago. How do you make the pitch to Hillary and her family to stay in the city?
You know, and I've had a number of parents and families who really are committed to Baltimore City, even and they still have other options, who are asking this question. So, you know, I appreciate Hillary being forthright about it. And it was one of the challenges for me in the messaging of this, was knowing that this might be an outgrowth of it. I would say a couple of things. One, we are trying to right-size the system. I do not want, both as a city resident, nor as an educator, nor as a parent, to keep coming back year after year and saying that we have gaps. This is about right-sizing the system. So that's number one. Number two, I feel like if we can do the kind of hard work maybe this year and next year that actually we can right size it and build back our enrollment. We're even now working on an enrollment campaign because we have a number of schools that are high and highly sought after. I mean, Hillary mentioned that. And so what we're working on now is how do we put the long-term pieces, not to be so focused on the short-term that we're not using this opportunity to right size. So what I've said to folks is, look, I did not know the gap was particularly this large when I decided to come to Baltimore City, but I have not closed down the shades, put out a closed everybody go home sign, right? I have been in Annapolis. I've been, you know, talking, and the new mayor has been great about, you know, staying in constant communication about this. Our elected officials in terms of the city council, our delegates, our state delegates, people are not turning a blind eye. And I think the good news in all of this is that because of the quality of analysis that we did and where people recognize the importance of schools being, you have a lot of people looking at this issue. And so I think that if we can, and I've said this to principals, I've said this to teachers, it's going to be rough for a little bit, but I would not still be here if I didn't think we could write the system, right? I would have said, thanks, it's been lovely, gone back to my house and done something else. I'm here because I do think that we have the traction. I sat with the principal yesterday who is over-enrolled by a large number of young people. Families are still coming. We still have quality programs like Hillary, like The Collar, like they're families that are choosing to stay in the city.
But isn't that some of the problem, though? Because what I hear from young families is that they're saying the schools that are highly sought after are mm-hmm. packed to the gills.
Right.
They can't get in.
Right. And so part of my job, part of the job of everyone in city schools, right, is how we have more of those schools. And some of it is in some of the things that we've been putting forth, that I've put forth in the last 6 months. So this, it was a small example, but it's significant, right? A lot of families, you know, want their elementary school kids to have real science, right? Not just have math and ELA. They want real science. They want to see that their young students can have exposure to art, right? And they have exposure to music. So what we have found is that when we put those programs in place where we have a strong school leader with a high-functioning teacher leadership team, those are the schools that are highly sought after. That's part of the work that's not changing regardless. And that, frankly, has been the most challenging part of confronting this budget gap, is that it has required me to be even more forceful with our schools and fierce about the fact that those goals have not changed. And we know that from our community. We know that that's what young students need. We know that's what I've listened to students throughout my first 3 or 4 months here as CEO, and what young people were telling me, like a lot of our adolescents, we need more connection to real world work. And so we're building that out, right? That work is not stopping. What this though means, and it's a flare, that we are going to, it, you know, it will slow the pace of that down. So what I've said to families who have very earnestly, very much like The Caller, very much like Hillary, who've said they've got to make a decision to make, I don't see this as a 5-6 year decline. I see this as a right sizing we need to do now. We need to get it right, bear down, and still move on all of the things that we know provide a quality education.
With 1,000 fewer people.
Maybe we'll be able to.
Right?
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. Perhaps.
Let's go to one more call before we take a break. Lindsay, as I understand it, you are a teacher in Baltimore City. Welcome to Midday
absolutely.
with your boss, Dr. Sonia Santelices.
Yes. Good midday to you. So I have two concerns. The first concern, you've already spoken to a little bit, which is the fact that having declining numbers of teachers, especially in music and art, which is my area of expertise, is potentially a social justice issue. You know, kids in the counties continue to get choices and enrichment, and students in the city, where they're majority black, majority poor, are not getting that opportunity. So I have a huge concern about that. And then my other concern had to do with retirement and retirement age, and wondering if the consideration had come to North Avenue of offering early retirement to minimize the amount of teachers who potentially have, I mean, God willing, many, many great years in the system left in us from getting eliminated before we really have a chance.
No, and those are great. That's a great idea. We are looking at that. The district has used that approach in the past. What we're looking at now is to see just how much gain based on who we have in the system that might be able to yield. So no, it's a great suggestion, and we are working on that. To your earlier point, what I would say to that is this is all a social justice issue. This has always been a social justice issue. When you look across the country, one of the things that I did, again, in our presentation to legislators as well as our city partners, was to say this is not just Baltimore City. If you look across the country, the school districts that are facing this kind of budget gap have the same profile. This is all about social justice, right? And so you're absolutely right. And I have absolutely no desire. I talked to our teacher of the year on Friday, you know, who is an art teacher. And she has probably single-handedly, just like you in teaching art, recaptured large numbers of kids who might have been disengaged with school through the art, through the venue of art.
And she was also, forgive me for interrupting, quoted in The Sun as saying, I can't take any more kids in my class.
Right.
I mean, if this class size gets bigger, and here's the teacher of the year telling you.
That's right. Tough. That's right. And so, but again, you know, we all recognize the challenge. The reality, though, is as the leader of the system, I'm charged with making the decisions. And so what I've said is if we continue along the trajectory that we are on, it's, you know, we can't do both. We can't have outcry. You know, this was my thing. You know, people say, oh, well, we shouldn't be doing this. Well, absolutely. And that's why it's a social justice issue. This is not the first time this has happened. It's not just Baltimore City. It's the same profile of community that is faced with these kinds of decisions. And so if everybody would, and I think a lot of people are, direct the attention that way and ask those questions, we'd be able to get traction in addition to
we will direct some more attention towards these and other questions. Great. With Sonia Sondalisas, the CEO and president of the Baltimore City Schools. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Lots more to talk about with the schools. We'll try to get to as many of your calls, emails, and tweets as we can. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest for this hour, Dr. Sonia Sondalisas. She's the president and CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. We'll try to take as many of your calls, emails, and tweets as we can. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Dr. Sondalisas, this is an email we've gotten from Elise, who says that since the school budget shortfall is a structural deficit, it means that a long-term fix is more than just laying off teachers and begging the state legislature for more funding. Mm-hmm. It means that the structure of the schools is no longer working. Mm-hmm. She points out that the state provides between 68 and 72% of school funding, and the city government provides about 25%, actually less than 25%. You know, with this inequity, are we always going to be at the whim of whoever is at in the governor's chair in Annapolis? I mean, every mayoral candidate who was running last April in the primary, and there are lots of them. I mean, I got the sense for a while that Luke Spicknall, our director and engineer, and I were the only two people in Baltimore not running for mayor. You know, but because it seemed I was interviewing an awful lot of people who wanted to be the mayor. Every single one of them said, we want more control by the city, including our current mayor, the one who won, Catherine Pugh, more control by the city. Is that a step you think we should take? What would that accomplish? And would that help or hurt?
I think look, at the level of city politics, I think there are examples across the country of different structures of relationships with local city and school districts. I'm working with the mayor regardless of what happens on that front. I think the real question, though, which the email points out, is really a structural one in terms of where is the funding going to come from? And as the leader of the school district, what I have to focus on is, one, making sure that the state funding formula moving forward continues to take into account our real wealth, not our perceived wealth, based on developments and new construction, which is also part of this, right, that we look richer on paper than our families are experiencing.
And this was a big part of the discussion we had with the Under Armour TIFFs, you know, to build Port Covington. Yeah.
Right. So we have that. Then the other piece is that we really need to make sure that the new funding formula takes into account, right, concentrated poverty, takes into account the needs of the young people that we are serving. And then the third piece long term, which, you know, again, as we noted, is we have to have quality programming that attracts more families. And we are still looking at efficiency. So we're not getting this whole gap.
When you talk about the new funding formula.
Yes.
Is there a chance that there is going to be a new funding formula?
They're working on it right now.
Because the funding formula basically says, you know, number of kids equals number of bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be able to substantially revise that so that it's more to, as you're suggesting, you know, consonant with what needs to happen?
Those are the questions we're asking. Those are the questions advocates are asking. Those are the questions the community needs to ask very vocally.
Here's a tweet from a member of the community. Melissa says, can you speak to zones? 33% of city schools are over 100% occupancy. And I don't know if that's true or not, but that's her impression. 10% of schools are less than 65% occupancy. So before you close the schools, why not redraw the zones?
Well, and that's an interesting question, right, in terms of the zones. With choice, families actually can attend schools out of zone. Particularly, as a matter of fact, we advocate very heavily for middle and high school level choice. I think some of the questions around occupancy and utilization, again, to the district's credit, over a number of years, we've been addressing through the closure of schools. We're looking at utilization rates as part of our agreement for the support that we're receiving for 21st century schools. But it doesn't mean that we might not need to take another look at it.
Let me play for you another bit of tape from Marietta English, the head of the Baltimore Teachers Union. Again, she was speaking to WIPR's Kenneth Burns last Friday about the expenses that you have for teacher salaries, which are obviously the biggest chunk of any budget.
We're willing to do our part to save jobs by working with the district and negotiating in good faith with the school board. But our children cannot get the education they deserve with 1,000 fewer people working in the schools.
It's commonly assumed that the pay scale of teachers in the city schools is a bit higher than surrounding counties. That the starting salary for a teacher in Baltimore is $67,000. It's about $61,000 in Baltimore County, for example. A contract that your predecessor, Dr. Alonzo, helped put together a few years ago has some teachers making, you know, more than $100,000 a year. I mean, are we paying the teachers too much?
So I think that part of, and, you know, keeping in mind that we're still in negotiation, so, you know, I need to take that into account. But what I will say is we're looking at full compensation, right? So we're also looking at benefits. What's the cost of benefits? We're looking at what is our collective, both us, you know, both the district and the union. How is the contract actually being implemented, right? So in all of the ways that teachers earn movement across the scale, are we monitoring that the way that we need to? Are we getting the most efficient implementation of the contract? I don't think anybody agrees with the original premise of the contract, and that was that teachers in Baltimore City deserve to be paid and compensated accordingly, but we want that to be based on also their contribution contributions to student learning, not just how long they've sat in the seat. And so that was one of the drivers. I think what we need to really get at
and
is...
And this is this first one in, last one, you know, out?
That's right.
Or
so,
last one in, first one out?
That's right.
So when you look at layoffs, you may not necessarily be looking at people, laying off people who have been with the system for 20 and 30 years. They may be burned out. They may be your less effective teachers. And you may be getting rid of some of the people who've just entered the school system, full of energy, full of idealism, full of good ideas. That's a tough thing.
No, and it is tough. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, we've had a number of our elected officials who've expressed concern about that publicly as well. It's certainly a concern of mine. And again, this is why, you know, this is not a dream scenario. This is like the worst case scenario. And so we're still working through what this means. But again, there's not one lever. But yeah, do we need to get costs under control in terms of our employee costs? Absolutely. And I've been very forthright about that.
Let's go back to the phones for a comment about another big chunk of expense that you and anybody who runs any organization has, and that's healthcare. Lee in Baltimore, welcome mm-hmm. to Midday mm-hmm. with Dr. Sonia Sonalisis.
Thanks for taking my call. And thank you, Dr. Sonalisa. I appreciate your work on behalf of the city.
Thank
just a comment I had is we had some engagement with the school system 2 years ago, I guess, and met with leadership there to lay out some ways to I work with a benefits consulting firm and lay out some ways just to make the process for benefits much more efficient. Mm. Unfortunately, it would have entailed an outlay of cash, but it wasn't a significant amount, and the savings could be documented to be between $2 and $3 million. And the folks that we talked with were very excited. They're like, we like this idea. We want to go forward with it. We had a second meeting with HR staff, and then it sort of fell off the table. And the comment that came back to us is, you know, Lee, we want to do this, but if we move on this, we're going to get pressure from the board asking us why we're spending money here and not that when it could be going to the teachers. And so the perception that you're just basically continuing down a path on your probably your second or third largest expense within the budget, and you have no insight or control over that cost.
All right. Well, Lee, we get your drift, and we're running out of time, so I want to cut you off there. Thank you for the call. I mean, this is probably one of several mm-hmm. areas that you're mm-hmm. obviously taking a look at.
No, absolutely. And I would, you know, just say, Lee, we need to probably revisit that conversation. We know that benefits and the increased cost of benefits for most organizations, as you noted, is a challenge. And, you know, again, I wasn't here then, but I will tell you we are looking at efficient administration of benefits because we know that's when we compare ourselves to other of our peer districts where, you know, our costs are significantly higher.
We have about a minute left. I want to ask you about school
police.
Mm-hmm. You've added, returned about 30 more school police officers to schools. Mm-hmm. There were some problems with certain officers in recent memory. Mm-hmm. And this is also part of the consent decree between the city and the Department of Justice. Where does that stand?
So where we are with school police is that we've really made a concerted effort to really engage our students and our communities in conversation. And some of that has included hard discussions, hard feedback from young people about how they feel that they've been treated and regarded. It has meant a renewed commitment to the training and investment in the training and development of school police, and frankly, a change in who we deploy in schools. There are frankly people, if you're not gifted in working with young people, I don't care what your official title is, you shouldn't be working with young people. And so what we've done is we've worked with, you know, we meet regularly with youth as resources. We have young people putting together a police report card. So we are making advances in that area.
Well, Dr. Sonalisis, I appreciate your time and appreciate the enormity and the difficulty of the decisions that you and your colleagues are facing. So thank you, and we will stay in touch and have you back.
No, thanks so much.
Dr. Sonia Sonalisis is the CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. She will announce her budget for the 2017-18 school year sometime soon, right?
Yes, yes.
And we've got more information and a link to the school system's website at wypr.org/midday. Lunch today was provided by the Baltimore Chef Shop on the Avenue in Hamden. They offer a variety of private events. events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines, tomorrow night at 6:30. They're offering a Mediterranean menu class. We'll have more on the web at BaltimoreChefShop.com. Coming up tomorrow on the program, our movie mavens, Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post, will stop by to handicap this year's Oscar nominees, and we will have a theater review from our intrepid theater critic, J. Wynn Russick. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad that you joined us today. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.